Nie, ja powiem w ogóle w rangu. Włączałem, będzie.
When you joined, already before you were fell over?
Ah, no, only when I went to the rugby. I used to play football at school, and I was quite a good footballer. But, like most things, I suppose, there comes a time when I feel that I spend enough time with the rugby. And
yes.
This business, this family business about, you know, they do all sorts, kinds of silly things now. The various managers will have a cup or a shield. For various things, a tug of war, you name it, whether it be running or football, you know, they seem to donate these sort of shields, and like Skippy's got a couple of shields in his office, and Lambert's got one in his, and it's all part of a bit of a brainwashing exercise to me, so I don't participate as a role in any social activities at work.
No, no. But in that cricket team, there were, you know, it's like foremen and people. Were
yeah, there are foremen. Yeah, and it's only with when people know that I'm playing. A lot of people make sarcastic remarks, and I know there's truth in what they're saying. But it's a bit of an interest. Although I mean, the team that I play with has actually got a foreman in it, and it's not as bad as I thought. I didn't think I'd be able to accept it again after. Talk in the way I do, but I certainly don't look upon it as being, you know, I try not to think that it's rover. As far as I'm concerned, it's with people at work, and they're not always, you know, they work associates, they're not, if you like, friends. You know, I try to divorce myself from the place, otherwise I find my knowledge is limited to people at work at Land Rover, and they can only have real interests of Land Rover, so I try to divorce myself a lot. And I'm too friendly with people, but not social.
But people do take a great interest still in those activities. I mean, other people.
Yeah, but it's only still a very small proportion of the people who work there who take advantage of it. I mean that if everybody pays 5p a week like they do, and there's only a few who don't, you know, there's a very few people who benefit from it. You know, if there's one football team, one cricket team.
Yes.
You know, there is actually a Rover cricket team, but I just play for a section thing, you know. And there's only a couple of the teams, there's only a few people benefiting. The vast majority don't want to know. The same as, you know, there's a bar, and that's used by very few. You know, if there's 3,000 people at work on the production side, you've been in the canteen at the time, and there's probably about 5% who use it. You know, the same as there's probably only 5% who use the social activities. A lot of people prefer to get away.
Yes.
And forget it.
Yes. Do you think that that you got originally more involved in those sports activities at Rover because of the sort of family connections with Rover?
No, I didn't. I got it through my own interests, but then I sort of thought, well, you know, this is all part of this exercise, I'm part of this family. And I didn't like it. I didn't like to think that I didn't want to be fooled. I like to think that nobody's fooling me.
No.
Although, I'm a bit hypocritical because I played cricket last season and I played this season. But, I mean, that's the first time I played cricket since I left school, which is, you know, sort of 16 years ago. But other than that, I have nothing to do with the Rover.
Have there ever been sort of direct confrontations between, say, social activities and trade union activity? I mean, not for you, but like, you know, some kind of conflicts or has it been challenged or in the past?
See, at the moment now, the way the social club is set up and it may well be a better social club when they built the new building, which they're presently building now. There was a time, I'm not sure whether there was a time when the trade union were involved in it, but they're certainly not now, and they're frowned upon. And once again, it's only sort of recently when they wanted to increase the double the premium to 10p a week, that the trade union try to get the members to these annual meetings or even extraordinary meetings, because so few people turn up. You know, probably like the branch meetings, they're ridiculous.
Yes.
You know, nobody turns up.
Yes.
Yeah, the few people who turn up will dictate the policy,
yes,
whether it be in the social club or the trade union.
Yes.
And that's just what it is. That's similar to what it is with the social club. A few people get away and whatever activities there are, or whatever, whether there's going to be a new building or not, was just done by a few people for self-glory or whatever.
Yes. When you joined the NUVB when you started, was there any sort of rivalry you experienced at the time between the NUVB and the
I team? Didn't, because I mean, I didn't become a shop steward until I was well into the TNG, and sort of at that time, like the majority, and well, you know, we have to say the truth, you know, is how I see it. I know we had a shadow there. People join the union because they have to. And it's only a few. It'll be a few who have personal problems who will realise the need for trade union, and there'll be a few people still who will be have sense enough to know there's a need for trade union. So certainly in you know, the first few years, it meant nothing to me when it changed from the NUVB to the TNG. And the fact that there's AEU and other unions there didn't mean a thing to me. And that's just what it means to the majority of people. But of course, when the day comes, we have a problem, then who do we turn to? And we can only turn to the trade union.
Yes.
And if it's weak, it's our own fault because we've all been lackadaisical.
But like, there wasn't any great sort of opposition in your section to joining the
TNG. No, I don't think so. No.
Wasn't a big deal.
No.
And what role did the 909 branch play in that amalgamation, do you know?
I couldn't say, you know. Like I say, at that time I have to say that the majority were completely disinterested in what was going on. It just meant a change of name to them. And that's all it meant to me.
Did it mean that, as far as you were aware of it, but that the indirect workers after the amalgamation could get jobs on the tracks which they couldn't get before? Like you suddenly would see people, you know, or were you not, you know, again, was it not
it was only when I became a shop steward that I realised there was this thing about indirect and direct, you know. I didn't, but apparently that's what used to go on, you know. If you was indirect, you could never get on the tracks, it was crazy.
Yes.
You know, even now people still like to try and say, well, you know, we know they're not indirect, but they are. They're not to me. It's crazy. You know, the same as, you shouldn't differentiate between people on different grades, you know, whether they'd be 1 and 5 or 1 and 6, you know, there's no difference to me.
But you noticed yourself how that plays through, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can't, could never understand it, but...
So, the 909 branch, you didn't get involved very much in them, did you?
No,
for a period?
No, only initially when I became a shop steward, like I've said, and...
Yes.
To go into meetings, I was getting interested in what was going on at Solihull. And if I could hear the same thing twice, and in other words, if I could hear the same report, and that's how it was, from the convener twice, then I know the second time I'll have remembered it all. And so initially that's why I went to the branch meetings, because they do put posters up, 909 branch meetings, so refreshments will be available. And I stayed for a few meetings, and when I could see that the majority of the branch business would be for the union as a whole, as opposed to the Solihull plant, I could see that once again there was something here that was going to be demanding of my free time, and so it wasn't for me. I had enough. I was quite satisfied with my lot as it was.
Yes.
And I say quite satisfied, because I know that if everybody needs to make a change, and if everybody attended the branches, then things could get changed that way. But I was I was lackadaisical. I thought, well, this will do me. And that's how it was. And that's the way it still is.
What about sort of anti-racism at the Rover? Did you ever get involved? Because that became a thing, wasn't it, in the mid-70s at the...
Well, yeah, there was a time, you see, when there was, certainly on Land Rover, I mean, the tracks, you see, the people who work on the tracks, that was the people... You see, in the money, yeah, that was the 1 in 5 people, and
yes.
Other people. If you was 1 in 6, it's because you're a rectification worker, or you worked on the track as a floater. Now, other than that, there was like 1 in 4, which would be conveyor hands, etc. Now, them were the jobs that mainly the few blacks that we had. We call them blacks, whether they be black or yellow, or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
Them were the sort of jobs I had, and I don't know why it was. You never had the blacks. But the area that I worked on, at the time, on the introduction, we had the first blacks working on the line, and they came from the cars, two of them, and I was pally with them both, you know, one I socialised with, and outside, and the other one I used to play cards with. And it was no problem to me, and no doubt, initially, other people, because, I mean,
yes.
I don't hold anything against them, I don't think. You know, whether I changed my mind if one moved in next door, and they played music all day, or whether I'd say, well, that's typical of the blackies, and I don't know. I know the whites do the same. As long as the cook is not strange, you know, if it smells funny, then obviously I probably would become prejudiced. But certainly the involvement I've had with them is no problem to me. So when they came into my area that I worked in, I was more than friendly with them. Like I say, I was good friends with the one. So what everybody else thought about them, I don't know. I never thought of that.
Wasn't there a sort of National Front activity as well?
There was nothing organised, although I'm still aware that there's a National Front person who works in my shop.
Mm.
You know, and I've actually been at a steward's meeting when he came charging in. I know him, but he's never, to my knowledge, gone around actively abusing the few blacks that we've got now.
Still a few only, isn't it?
Yeah, still only a few, yeah. You know, like I say, the two that came in, they both left now, both took redundancies.
Yes.
But the few that are left there now have been there years. You know, and there is only a few.
Why is that, that there's still so few?
I haven't got a clue. Perhaps whoever interviews them is being biased. Or prejudiced, I should say.
Or is it maybe because this old system of you get a job at the Rover through people you know is still working? Like, I mean, in some ways it's reinforced nowadays, like, on the left, because there are fewer jobs. I mean, there are very few people who get a job now anyway, of course, but it's like, you know, if you hear of someone getting through someone else, then it's a sort of easy way through. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, of course we have to go back a few years, when they were recruiting.
Because the last 3 years they wouldn't have recruited hardly anyone.
I would say that a lot of the blacks that we had sort of years ago were illiterate, so it would probably be difficult for them anyway to try and make any sort of arrangements to get people in. The best of time, then no doubt there are the people who interviewed who were prejudiced.
Yes,
and of course there was a time when they wouldn't have been around the tracks anyway.
No.
So there was a limited amount of jobs.
You mean management didn't want them?
I can only guess that, because people are prejudiced, you know, without a doubt.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
yes.
I think we're in a minority, and who don't, you know, think about it too much. We don't. We're obviously against the blacks ourselves.
It was a bit different on the SD1 again, wasn't it? Because they recruited so many people over such a short time.
They did. There was a lot down there. And like I say, that's where we got our first two blacks
from.
So even the few blacks that we had in the shop doing indirect work, we call it that. That's another way of describing it. They weren't introduced onto the tracks. They brought these people who were fitters from the SD1 up. In other words, the people who were on the 1 in 5 rate up. Straight transfer officer. That sort of proved it. the other blacks. We kept sort of material handling or the other combiner handling or whatever.
Yes. And when you moved jobs, like you said, you know, when you started on the most difficult job,
yeah.
And then that was always the case. Was that always like they called the progression system, or wasn't it called like that then?
Normally it's the new person, obviously, went in because they tried it and we had a grip of the progression system.
Mm.
And there was always a bad job and there was always a better job. And that's how you did progress, you know, if somebody moved out the group for whatever reason, or the group got bigger, or somebody wanted a change, there was in them days, they'd let you change, no problem at all. Even though it was at a cost to them, in other words,
yes.
I wanted to move to another job, somebody, the flouter, would have to show me that job. And the bloke who was moving, somebody had to show him, so there's a cost there.
Mm.
And they were prepared to put up with it in them days.
And the stewards arranged all that they were? Or did the foreman do that?
No, the stewards would do it. You know, the stewards would oversee it. I mean, when I wanted the foreman told me, and when my second job was available, he said, there's a job up there if you want it. And I've got an idea, in actual fact, the shop stewards told me, came around and told me, he said, look, it's a heavy job. Are you sure? You know? And I said, yeah, because I had to make a move. So. But then I got off that job, then I said, told the foreman, the job was killing me. Well, not killing me, but hurting me back, which was heavy work. And he arranged another move in the group. Somebody else moved out of the group, and he says, you can have that one there. But because I was on the actual worst job, the heaviest job in the group, nobody opposed it. And the other couple of moves I made within that same group was done to the foreman, you know, I said.
Mm.
Or it may well be in the shop too. They said, there's a job going up there, do you want it?
Yes.
And
as a rule,
people didn't want to move around, you know, but I was, like I say, as I go on each job, I was getting bored. Or whatever, you know, doing the same monotonous job, I found sometimes I got an ache in the same place. So I moved that ache from there to there and there, whatever I was might be doing, yes sir.
Yes.
So he broke monotony as well as sort of physically doing a boring job. I never went there well with me at all.
But they didn't have problems like when there was a vacancy in one section, they had to move everyone, like...
Yeah, well that's what's caused the problem that we've got now. In other words, that's what caused us to lose control of the progression system. That was to say, there was you could end up with half a dozen people in the same group,
yes,
all moving, all wanting to get a slightly better job. So of course, if you multiply that by the time that one person might be needed to train each of those people on a different job, it was at a cost. You know, the same as if there was a job in one of the perk areas, you see, you had the assembly lines, and then you had the rectification tracks off. You see, the smaller shops as it was then, although they're all coming in a big building now. They used to be scattered there and everywhere, you see, all these, you know, Land Rovers used to go up this, zigzagging before it went out the gate. You know, although it should sort of run down our line and then run onto the final line.
Yes.
Years ago, it never did, you see, so come down our line, and it was always incomplete. For numerous reasons, short of material or whatever, and that would go into compound, then it would go to the fire line, then it might have to have something else done, it would go to so-and-so, then it would be driven across to so-and-so, whereas is now all those shops are on a fairly easy line, if you like, so they'll pass through all these shops in a circle, you see, as opposed to doing this. I mean, they've found, for instance, they've saved the cost of fuel. You know, the bit of fuel they used to use on the site, so perhaps you were putting a gallon in, and then you need to put half a gallon in now, because they've organised the system. The system's much better. But of course, what used to happen, for instance, if there was a job in one of the rectification shops outside of where I worked, and there's a number of them about, to be able to get into those shops, you had to be one of six or eight person, you see. So you had to become a floater.
Yes.
Right? As well as getting anything else, you had the ability to go into these perk shops. You know, these. And of course, there was no production pressure, so that was another perk. So of course, now for me to transfer over there, I knew where I got to go floating, and after a while, if I proved myself, I could go and work over there. So I put my name down for a job over there. So of course, I'd go over there, and whoever it was would move, for whatever reason, whether it left or when he'd go to another shop, I'd move, and then somebody would say, well, yeah, I'll have the floater's job. So he would come off the track. Then that leaves a hole there. Then somebody's got to be brought in, so they pick somebody off the street, but they don't put him there. They put him on the bottom of the line.
Yes.
Because so-and-so's moving there, and he jumps in that hole. So it got quite ridiculous, I suppose, to a degree. From the selfish point of view, we was getting what we wanted. We was looking after our people, but there was a cost to the company.
Mm.
And that, no doubt, contributed to, the idea that the system was squashed. All of a sudden, we got to a phase where the company said, we're doing it no more.
If they'd said that
prior to that, we'd have said, no, we're doing it. And that was in the day when we won the place, Well, we didn't manage it, but we certainly told them what got to be done and what not got to be done. But of course, all of a sudden, the Iron Fist came in. It only came through the Edwards when we saw, our senior stewards getting disciplined or threatened.
Yes.
And we thought, what's going on? Nothing's happening. People didn't realise nothing was happening because they weren't doing anything. Their leaders was weak because they allowed it. They keep saying, what's the union? They keep forgetting that they are the union.
Mm.
And that's the reason this has happened and that's happened.
So nowadays, is it completely disappeared, the progression?
You can still get it if it suits the company. For instance, they'll let somebody move if that person needs no training, or it suits them. If he's a troublemaker, he doesn't move. As a rule, it used to be service counts, you see. Your service always counted, you see. The trade union insisted service.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yes.
Even if it took you 2 days or a week to learn a job, you would have it. We would always want to look after you. But of course, it was a cost of the company. So when it came, it came.
Mm. Mm.
But there's still, to a degree now, people can still move, but not, within a group, if somebody left and the job had got to be filled, the foreman might be inclined to get the new person who comes along, and he could do it quite easily, and say to the new person off the street or from another shop, because it's closed down, that's your job there. And it might be the best job in the group. And the group won't do anything about it. Or the job might be complicated, and the foreman will say, well, okay, I'll let you move then if you want to move, and I'll put that new bloke on there. So it's only when it suits them, as a rule. That's definitely the rule.
So do you still keep a progression list for your section?
No. Nobody does now.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting that, isn't it? How has it gone?
Yeah, like many things have just gone.
Yes. Now, you already said that in the beginning, when you started work, it was quite easy for people to take time off work, wasn't it? When you first started in the 1970s, if they wanted half a day off or a day off, that was quite easy, or did I understand?
Well, no, it wasn't. It was never easy, but I mean, people could afford to take it off in them days. And I mean, there was never a disciplinary procedure then, you see.
If
they wanted to take it off, they just took a day off, and that was it. Come in the next day, and those people who was brave enough would say, went fishing, or whatever, or I did that, or whatever, it didn't matter.
Yes.
You got away with blue murder, but of course now there's a system whereby after so many absences or lates, if you haven't got good reason, and that reason can only be determined by the foreman, then a level of discipline will be instituted, progressively you'll get sacked.
So that, again, that was all tightened up with Edwards, wasn't it? And it's the same with leaving early, isn't it? Leaving work early. They sometimes tighten that up now, do they?
Yeah, well, you see, like most things, that is our fault. People in some shops, because they was not tied to a track like we are, they was able to get in front. In other words, they was be able to do that much work because, there was that much slack on their time that they was able to finish at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And they might say, well, I'm not going to sit down here all day. And they'll just slope up and walk out the factory, climb over the gate, or just walk straight out. Climb over the fence, or just walk straight out. And of course, the company side, they used to get numerous phone calls in. We've just seen a dozen blokes climbing over the fence, what's going on? You know, of course, the more public sort of island that we became, the more people thought that they'd got a say in the place. But of course, our own people would say, people would be working away. We'd see these people going and say, ta-da, and we'd still be working away. So there's quite a lot of jealousies there. And of course, they, all of a sudden, the stick came down, all at the same time, because groups would always be stronger than the managers, while we're all part of a big ball. And all of a sudden, the stick come down, and that was it. But the company took the easy option. Instead of, disciplining those people who were leaving early, they then started saying, we're going to draw a line. And it's black and white again. And anybody who leaves before the given time, 4 o'clock as it is now, whether it be 10 seconds or 3 seconds before, originally they suspended you for days. In other words, they fined you £20, which we thought scandalous. But once again, it was the whole disciplinary procedure came in and the members accepted it. And it was only those people who actually got penalised who started to squeal. But of course, there are many reasons why people could sometimes leave a minute or so early when we don't clock out. So people can just do it by accident. People can just walk through a door, and if they catch the wrong foreman there, you know, as it is now, they've moved away from suspending. They now make it clock out, which not many people like, because you're mocked. People laugh at you, and they see you queuing, because you know there's only a few, 1%, who have to clock out. Although it's part of our contract of employment to clock out, it's a perk. If you like, it's bad. You see, when we come in the morning and we all come in at different times, it's staggered. When we all, say I leave here at 7:10, some people are there at 7:10. Some people are there at 7:10, so they've clocked. So if we're all clocking at different times, but before 7:30, it's okay. But at 4 o'clock, you've got hundreds of people all waiting to clock at the last time. So the last person's got might be 2 minutes late. And when you're in a rush to get out, people don't like that sort of idea.
No, no.
So they haven't insisted upon that yet, even though it's written in. That's almost they could do it any time. Huh. I know that they could do it any time, and there'd be a few amounts of grounds, and that'd be it. You know, that's the real world.
And the same with getting up allowance, wasn't it?
That's once again, like I said, it's a scandal, the sort of things that I know that we did in the early days. That we, I think kitchen up was always there, and it was always there in the paint shops.
Yes,
and that was it. But then sort of in the shop I was in, the people who bleed the brakes, they have to put rubber gloves on.
Yes.
It sort of started from there then. They said, well, look, why should I put rubber gloves on? And it started from there, rubber gloves, and then it was boots. They needed protective boots, you see.
Yes, yes.
Some groups had free boots, other groups had 50% boots. And so the bloke would say, look, I've got to put boots on because of this brake fluid, and I need these rubber gloves, I need an armlet, something here, for when I'm caught underneath. And I need another pair of gloves, I need to put cream on, and then I need to put cream on after the day. So that's kitting up started there, and of course when it's kitting up, we then ended up with early start. That was something else. You know, somebody who didn't even get early kitting up applied for an early start, and I had people when through negotiating with the company, I got an early start, and within a couple of levels, I got it. And I said, these blokes need to get their tools ready and all this. Oh, it was a scandal. It was a scandal, the payments that was being made. And so therefore, you was breaking away from a uniform pay. Some people could be on as much as £10 a week. £10 a week when you were probably talking about £80. So, where somebody was on like £80, somebody was getting on £90.
Because of all
the... Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and quite often, they didn't even have to clock in any earlier. It was just given to them. Mm. So you get to the system whereby strong people was getting more money.
Yes.
And that causes problems, we start fragmenting again. So to a degree, the people who, the senior stewards at sort of Leyland, as it was then, became BL, that was squashed at a certain level. They decided that they got to go. And it was a good thing. Good thing they did go.
And then you said you worked a lot of overtime, huh? But that was more because of your section. So Well, how much did you sort of work?
Well, I could...
Like every other Saturday or something?
Well, hell, you know, I could work a couple of nights a week, and Saturday and Sunday, and as a rule, if I wanted. So, it's only after a while that it hits everybody. I mean, if you're working 7 days a week, you only get 2 afternoons off. And then, so in other words, you're waking up every morning. You're getting all this money. And what's it for? To do what? Just for when the holiday comes. Or to go out at night. But you're tired at night. But some people, there's still a few people who try to do that now. Whenever there's opportunity for overtime, they'll do it. Even though it means. And last week, 2 weeks ago, I worked Saturday and Sunday. For the first time in 12 months, I worked overtime. And when I got to work on the Monday, they said, we'd like you to work every night this week and next weekend as well. I says, no. You came back to me again.
Yes.
You know, work.
Yes.
For what? You know, the money that we get isn't enough. You know, the reward for giving up your social time, it ain't enough.
No.
And it could never be enough.
No. But you earn a lot, don't you? I mean, if you just work a day.
A lot compared to what we're earning now. It's not a lot of money.
No.
So compared to the standard living I'm earning now, yeah. Could be something like, say, £16 for a Saturday morning as opposed to, say, £20 for, say, Friday. Friday I'd earn, say, £20 all day. Saturday morning I could earn £16 by dinner time. Or Sunday I could earn, something like, say, £20, £21, £22 for Sunday morning, which is a lot of money compared to what I'm earning. But when you look back and you pay your tax, you think, God, I've made 12 quid for what? I have to get up and I've sown all my day in.
Yes.
You know, and,
yes, it's another day in your life, isn't it? Just a few more things. Because the line speed was obviously, is always a big thing, management trying to speed up the line.
Yeah, and of course they get away with it, and this is the scandalous part about it, I believe that's one of the reasons why I never got on their time study course. Well, it was, the company has stated that I've got a negative attitude. I show a negative attitude, and that means that I challenge them.
Yes.
And although I haven't got a cycle time myself, you see, I'm not governed by time doing the job I'm doing. I know that other people, how important it is to other people, and that they shouldn't get abused.
Mm.
And it'd be nothing for the... in the past, it's a simple operation to turn the speed of the track up. It just means opening a box up and turning a dial. And you've got to be very careful, but as a rule, within a few minutes, they knew that they could sort of speed it up over the day and catch back whatever they might have lost. In other words, if there'd been a breakdown. And then, other than that, they'd just leave it up anyway. And the tracks would be, it'd be nothing for us to finish, like it was recently, to finish it half an hour early. Now, that half an hour doesn't enable us to go home half an hour early. It gives the companies a half an hour to play with if there's a break there. So
yes.
People are working, now somebody is working to the 100 performance,
yes.
If we can call it that. For them to finish a half an hour early, they're working above 100 performance. And that immediately shows to the company anyway that all the times are wrong. You know, somebody's got 90, the figures are 98 on his sheet, he works at 98 because not many work at 100. They can't get that close, although a lot work at 99 point something. It's crazy. If anybody can finish half an hour early, it shows all the times are way out.
Mm.
And technically, the blokes should all be sort of struggling and going out the shop and everything with them. You know, they can't cope or shouldn't be able to cope. And I've been involved in many arguments over the tax work. And there was a time when they insisted I was going to have a 16-minute overspeed on the line that I worked. And I said, you're not. And they said, we are. And what are you going to do about it? You know, that's the attitude that a lot of shop stewards get. What are you going to do about it? You know, and that's what it boiled down to. And in the end, I was able to negotiate with the deputy senior steward who left. A 6 minute overspeed, but I've got no rights to. I should just say to them, run it at the correct speed. Because running at the correct speed dictates the labour.
Yes.
Dictates the vehicles. You want
yes.
You want so many vehicles, for so many vehicles you need so many people.
Yes.
And the track's got to run at a certain speed. and you can't mess around with that formula. But they'd have got away with a 16-metre overspeed if we hadn't argued and got down to 6. But that's where trying to make the best of a bad job. But there's probably only just sort of one or two of us who would ever challenge a company on it, you see. And they don't want people who challenge them.
Yes.
Anybody who challenges, then they're not going to. And that's one of the reasons why I never got on the course. And that's something that's still got to be argued with the stewards yet.
And that was different in the days before, when the committee was strong. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, wouldn't have got away with it.
So what would have happened then in this sort of...
What would have happened on a situation like that? We'd have stopped
just
work.
Just walk out?
No, we'd have stopped work and said, yeah, get that track running right. And they'd have had to get it right. And if anything, it would have run slow. But it wouldn't run fast. You know, it's their job. Just like they say now, it's their job to manage. It's their job to get that track running to the correct speed. Mm. If they can't do it, then they've got to carry the can for it, not us.
Mm.
We shouldn't have to work harder because they can't do something right.
Mm.
Then there's no reward in it. There's no reward. We can't go home half hour early, although that would abuse the times that we've got. You know, the actual times of the jobs.
Yes, yes.
You know, we have to sit there for half an hour. And yet you poke your nose out the door before a minute early, and they will have you clocking out, or as it was, suspend you. After you've given them all that time every day, half an hour.
Yeah.
You sit there, just staring like that, and everybody stares, waiting. So there, yeah, we can't go over. Although it's not the right thing anyway.
Yes.
No, as shop stewards, we can never say that's the right thing to do. We can only insist on the track running at a dead speed. It's their job to do that.
Is there, or did there used to be sometimes sort of sabotage on the tracks?
Well, yeah, I'm aware that people must have thrown stuff in the track, because I think that's where it started in our shop. Quite often people used to find metal stuck in the tracks, you know, whether it be a hinge or a screwdriver or something. And I mean, I've actually dropped tools in the track a couple of times, and I've had it stopped. And the one time, the track actually jumped. And of course, when it jumped, it surges, you see. Now, if you're on a particular job under a wheel, and all of a sudden it surges, say that much, it could break your leg, or if it was underneath, it could break your head.
Mm.
Now, fortunately, I don't think we've ever had anybody injured, and we've had dozens of occasions when it surged. And it's a dangerous practice, and we can only applaud the company if they try to sack somebody for it.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And that's all there is to it. But there certainly was sabotage in Ayrshire. People were throwing stuff in the track.
I have heard that under piecework that didn't used to happen like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, well, sort of in the piecework days, for instance, like it is now, quite often there'd be a breakdown, a overhead breakdown, because a lot of our material would come on the overhead side.
Yes.
And of course, these are very old overheads. Quite often they'd break down, and what would happen then is that. Normally it should be the maintenance people who should get up there and untangle the mess, whatever it was. But it'd be nothing for the foreman to go up there, or anybody. Do what they can to get the track going, that's what you said. Get it going.
Yes.
It's money.
Yeah.
But now not too many people, you know, as much as it was in them days, and we was on a higher standard of living, there's more people who are more inclined to sort of turn a blind eye just to get the track money. Nowadays they totally oppose it, even though they need the money.
Mm.
But because it's measured, you say, they're not actually losing any money, although the company will.
Mm.
And in the long run, that will show somewhere, you know, detrimental to them. If that was the case, we'd be in all kinds of problems, but it doesn't happen too often now.
All right. I think we've covered most of the sort of things I wanted to talk about. Is there something you think it might be of interest, which I don't know, or which is particularly, you know, significant, or what have changed, you know, especially what has changed in the last few years, or something I shouldn't miss, or something I should maybe look at?
Whether you could ever get to the truth, I'm not sure, but I mean. Well, quite often people will say to you that they've been sort of threatened, you know, personally, especially shop stewards.
Oh, yeah, victimisation.
Yeah, that's what, yeah. you know, we'll do this. What are you going to do about it? And that sort of thing. Or, but certainly, on this shop committee that we had a very strong person, and his name was Mickey Lyons. So whether you could ever get to the truth, whether Joe would ever tell you, I don't know, because I can't remember.
Joe would know.
Eh?
Joe Harris?
Yeah, he'd know, because what happened was, this particular issue went off plant to Sam Robinson, and I think it even went to the region, and that was whereby Lambert, sort of when Lambert came on the scene, although he was a friendly sort of bloke, but he was dead on his, you know, he'd say, I'm going to get you, you know, and companies didn't want like that, but apparently this is his game, and he got to the point where he, these particular shop steward's credentials were challenged. He'd been a shop steward for some time, and he was on the committee, and we'd been causing this problem and that problem. And his credentials were challenged, and he went through the procedure, and he went to off plant to Sam Robinson, and I believe he went to the region. And at the time, I'd been there when this particular shop steward had been threatened. You know, he said, I'm going to get you, just the same as I've been told he's going to get me. So, when it come to one particular meeting of plant, they wanted me. He wanted me as a witness, and the company wouldn't have it, wouldn't entertain it. But even sort of since then, even you know, I've been threatened, and you know, I'm going to get you. You know, you're going to go. And my wife knows about it. You know, I tell her. She knows the score. It wouldn't surprise me if one day. You know, they come along and they said, you're out. They're gonna, you know, they find some punitive reason.
Yes, they can
To get shut at me, and I'd find that I'd be on my own. There'd be nobody to support me.
You know, what happened in that case?
He never got his credentials back. He's never got his shop steward's card back.
And what did he do?
And in the end, he took his redundancy. Now that was at a time when there was no real redundancy knocking around, but because he'd been. Because he was still capable of being a thorn in the company's side, he asked for his redundancy and he got it. And he left and he worked on the building, worked on building sites now. But he was one of the stronger ones when I had on that committee. But I think this, you know, we've seen this happen anyway, sort of throughout sort of Leyland, where as a rule, no matter what, when the shop steward gets it, he's on his own. So we are martyrs to a degree, because any good shop steward, any shop steward worth his salt, will be threatened by the company, because they've got no time for people who are able to stand with them toe to toe and argue with them. Oh, not just shout, but argue and win an argument. See, same as the old days. You see, I've seen what's happened. In the old days, we was some were incapable of arguing, or arguing with a company, and we were just getting away with threats, and we were blackmailed. Now it's the other way around. Quite often we can win an argument, but they will have their way. You know, they can't justify anything that they're doing, and we can justify everything we're doing. But they're just as bad now as probably we were to them years ago.
Yes, but
we've always had that sort of thing.
I heard that, yes.
But I mean, just as other senior stewards might say, they've had it. They've been threatened, you know. It goes through to anybody who's any kind of threat to the company, anybody who's prepared to oppose it. One day, the company could liquidate you.
Yes.
You could go at any time.
Yes.
Especially in this day and age, when there's no jobs. That's why, if you like, the quality of shop stewards is dropping, because people won't take up the shop steward's credentials.
Because it's too dangerous.
That's right.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense. It's as simple as that.
Yeah,
it
makes that's right. But some people just have to live with it. You know, I'm more careful than I ever was. But I still believe there are times when I leave myself open, whereby if they wanted to, they could have nailed me.
Yes.
But I'm still aware of that.
What are the... some of the people you think I might well talk to who...
I've told you about Johnny Holbert, right?
Yes.
If you put John... If you put Johnny, because everybody knows you as Johnny, Johnny,
yeah.
Hulbert. Hulbert.
Do you have his number?
No. Now, he's in the canteens. I think he's in the canteen. Most dinner times. He works in that. You know where I took you that day?
Yes, that was the chassis. Was the first stage, wasn't it?
That's the stage two, yeah. But I mean, that's it was around the chassis area, wasn't it? He works on the sub assembly. You know what the sub assembly is? You know,
yes.
He works off the line.
Yes.
Sort of.
Well, he should be on the phone, shouldn't he?
No, he wouldn't be getting on the phone.
Oh.
You know, it's getting you to, you know, getting being able to meet him. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yes.
You need seeing it. I mean, if you, it's talking to the right person so that. Because some people might not like you.
No, but that always happens.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. I mean,
I'm trying to think who I can get you to see who will definitely take you to him.
You don't know where he lives around here.
No.
Somewhere.
No, I don't know where you're trying to. You'd have to try and catch him at work. Unless you was able to. You know, Dave Collins might be helpful. Dave Collins knows where he works.
Okay,
right?
Yes.
So, whether he'd find the time or whatever, if you see Dave Collins, he'd probably take you up to him.
Yeah.
And then.
Or I can write him a note. Yeah,
he might
ask him to meet me
afterwards. Yeah, but as a rule, you see, I mean, for instance, if I had a letter, if I had a letter from, I don't know who you
no.
are, and I wouldn't go.
No.
No. But I mean, I know you.
Yes.
So I know you're legitimate.
Yes.
Now, if Dave Collins actually took you up to him, and whether he'd be prepared to meet you in his half hour dinner,
yeah.
I don't know, or. Will he be prepared to meet you after work?
Yes.
I don't know.
No.
But you'd certainly be. He could tell you quite a few of the changes that have gone on. You know, and he'd give you reason. I mean, he was actually on that committee. He'd be able to give you reasons why he's not.
Yes.
You know, why he's disillusioned.
Yes. No, that's. I think it is.
Like I say, he's that bit older than me, and he was a shop steward before I was ever a shop steward.
I think
so,
it is important to find out why people are not, you know, what's happening. So, and then there's Dave Coyne, of course, but I'll find him.
Yeah, you'll catch him next week.
And is there anyone else, who you think? Someone from either the same area on the Land Rover or some other section who... Maybe someone you know, or I can easily sort of ring up or...
Yeah. I don't think there is, really. No, cause there's so few people interested in what's going on at work anyway. You know, that limits you.
Yes.
To the few people that you can speak to.
Yes.
I can't think of anybody else.
Jim Beasley, he did the time study.
George Beasley.
But that, I can always ask via Dave Collins, probably. You don't know where he hangs out.
George Beasley, no. Dave Collins has got his phone number.
In actual fact,
he works only 2 minutes away from Johnny Hulbert.
Oh, right.
George Weasley might even know where Johnny Hulbert works, you know,
if I can ever go round there, then. Okay.
Yeah, if you told Dave Collins that you've actually been up on the lines, and he'll know you've been here before, you know, he thinks he might feel as if he's going to get a phone, you know, to get permission, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. All right. And then, I mean, I am interested sort of to meet your father if he feels like it after his holidays.
Yeah, I think it's still another 4 weeks.
But that's September, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's August 24th.
All right. Yes, I'll